Good evening. And greetings in Jesus' name. Have you worshiped today already? And I want to hold out the thought, as Brother Delbert was sharing there, every day when we choose to live for God, in a sense, is a form of worship, giving back to Him. And so, as we go into the message tonight, I have a burden I'd like to share, and I want to be clear, it's not pointed at anyone, but it's for each one of us. As I analyze my own experience, and as I observe our tendencies as people, I'd like to share the burden. Tonight, as we as members here of Cornerstone are preparing to answer four questions. Do you have peace with God? Do you have peace with your fellow man? Do you support the church? And are you looking forward to communion? And these questions are all woven together. But tonight I'd like to, I'll be mainly focusing on the first three, because how we answer the first three determines our answer to the last one, whether or not we should be looking forward to communion or not. When someone asks you during the day, how are you doing? Most of us don't even think about our answer, at least not much. We will tend to give a superficial answer. That's for several reasons. It's because we may not feel like talking about how we're doing. We may not want people to know how we're doing. Or maybe we kind of take it for granted that they're just being polite and they don't even want to know. They don't actually care. Well, I don't think it really matters. I think usually that is the case. It's a polite conversation. A lot of times, unless it's a good friend that specifically asks you. So it may not matter how deep we get with being honest with that answer in our day-to-day exchanges with people. But tonight, the questions we answer are serious questions, and they demand a serious and honest answer. Because we're a church, we're a body, you're talking to the church body, you're giving your answer to men before God. So it's important that we each take an honest look as we consider the past 6 months, to think, how am I? How are you actually doing in light of these questions? And so kind of the thrust of this message is to stir our minds and stir us to an openness and honesty. And if we put those words together, I believe we have authenticity. Right? But the big question is how can we even know if we're being honest with our answers? Because it takes some, we need to do a little searching and maybe do some tests. And as I thought about this, I thought about the message I'd preached some time ago about the Medes under the wall, and we looked at the illustration of Babylon with its big walls, and how I paralleled that with the church having walls that keep out some of the big, what we would list as the big sins, you know, we don't really have problems with killing, stealing, cheating, and adultery here in our circles. They're not very common. And I parallel that to the walls of the church. We keep some of those out. But in the historical city of Babylon, the walls stayed standing strong and the enemy came in anyway. But not just that. Because when the enemy did come in, the Babylonian people, not the soldiers, not the king necessarily, but the common people wanted them to come in. They welcomed them in. Why? Why in a city like Babylon? How could the people? Well, they were dissatisfied with the leadership, the king, and the way that whole political system was set up. And they thought the Medes would bring something new and new opportunity for them. And we parallel that to how we have the walls of the church, and yet sins of the spirit can sneak in under, like the Medes did under the wall when they diverted the river. Sins of the spirit can sneak in under the wall into our lives and attack us inside the walls right here. And things like pride and selfishness and wrong attitudes. And so tonight, I would like to consider a Mede under the wall in relation to our council service and the whole context of what I was talking about in answering how we know if we're being honest, or like how we answer the questions. And this, I wasn't totally sure what to call it, but for now, this Mede is a wrong perspective of church structure and accountability. In other words, I'll call this Mead a false love, or a false love for God's church. And that brings me to the title, Do I Love the Church? And the message tonight is built around a relationship, looking at a relationship. Paul compared Christ's relationship with the church like a marriage. And we could look at other relationships as well, work relationships, team relationships, and different things. But Paul compared it to Christ's relationship with the church in Ephesians 5, and couple those verses 25 through 27. He gives the illustration, husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. And he gives the illustration, he continues on, in verse 28, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. And so he's paralleling the relationship of a marriage with the way the church is set up with Christ as well. And for the sake of time, we will just stick with that marriage relationship. But In a world full of broken relationships and marriages, you know, so many of them, they seem to start very well. But so many of them go wrong. And how does a couple even know if they love each other? If they're into marriage, you know, for some time, maybe a few years, what are things that maybe they have in place or they can look at to confirm their love? Is there a checklist that they can go down through every day? And maybe a husband, when they get married, a husband gives his wife this checklist and says, okay, you're going to, you know, check off, you're going to do all these things and you can check this off. And as long as you're checking off that list, then I know you love me. And the wife's like, well, here's my list and you can make sure you do that stuff. And then I know you love me. And so they go through life and he's checking off things and he hangs his clothes on the hook and check that off. And he goes to work and he checks that off and puts the dirty clothes in the hamper instead of on the floor when he gets home, checks that off. He's really doing good at loving his wife. And her list is, you know, she gets up and maybe early and she makes breakfast, check that off. And yeah, kiss him goodbye, check, and clean the kitchen, check. And she's checking this list off. And they're making sure they love each other because they know that because they're checking that list off. But does that sound a little bit ridiculous? Because for those of us who are married, do we need that checklist for those simple little things to know if you love each other? Does that have any bearing? Like if you're doing those things without a checklist, it's kind of ridiculous to have that list because they shouldn't do those things. They should do them voluntarily, not mechanically. They shouldn't need a checklist, right? Or what if they swapped lists and if it wasn't completely filled out, they would hold up the list and say, I don't think you love me because you missed. You didn't put your dirty clothes in the hamper, so you don't love me like you should. So it feels very stretched, right? That's not how it works. And if we look at John chapter 14, we'll look at a few verses there. I'd like to read John 14, verse 15, and then jump down to verse 21 through 24. John 14, 15, if ye love me, keep my commandments. And verse 21, he that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him. Judas saith unto him, not Iscariot, Lord, how is it that thou wilt manifest thyself unto us and not unto the world? Jesus answered and said unto him, if a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and he will come, and we will come unto him and make our abode with him. And the first part of verse 24, he that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings. And so from these verses, Jesus makes it very clear the signs of true love. Verse 15, if you love me, keep my commandments. Verse 21, he that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And verse 23, if a man love me, he will keep my words. So, love God and keep his commandments. That goes hand in hand. Keeping the commandments shows love for God. How does this look in a marriage or the church? And we're going to be kind of jumping back and forth a little bit on that. But if we look for tests of true love in a marriage, one of the first things we see is commitment. And it starts out with words. Maybe you would argue it starts out in a dating relationship, but at marriage, there's words exchanged, vows we call them. People tell each other they will love each other for the rest of their life. They will give a vow to always love, be committed, and faithful. And then that's followed up with actions, basic actions. Those things I was talking about, like the checklist, you know what? In probably most of our homes, it's understood your responsibilities for the most part in general. And like they happen. We do them. Most of us men who are married, we go to work. I didn't look who all's here. No. And for wives, it's expected that you fill your place in the home, taking care of the home, making food, doing laundry and cleaning and that. But there's a third, another part to this, and that's sacrifice. Commitment requires sacrifice. You know, when they commit, there are all of a sudden there's preferences that might need to be given one way or another. There's schedules that need to be coordinated, and one spouse may have to cut something out to accommodate their lives. There may be comforts given up. Maybe the wife gets up early in the morning instead of sleeping in and makes breakfast for her husband. There's could be many different things. Maybe there's food allergies, and that requires them to change their diet and have a special diet in their home. And that this is really where those words that were shared initially get put to the test. Their love gets tested. How does that parallel with the church? You know, people come to know Christ and they give their heart to Him. They make a vow at baptism to follow Him. In our church, the first three baptismal vows, vow questions ask if you believe in God and then in Jesus Christ and then in the Holy Ghost and the attributes with them. And then question four says, are you truly sorry for all your past sins, and are you willing to renounce Satan, the world, and all the works of darkness, and your own carnal will and sinful desires? And question five, do you promise by the grace of God and the aid of the Holy Spirit to submit yourself to Christ, His word, and His church, and to faithfully abide in the same until death? I don't know if that's worded exactly how it was when you were baptized, but probably something very similar to that. And so in this, we see a commitment to action. We will renounce Satan, renounce the world, renounce our carnal will, and sinful desires. And then some sacrifices also suggested in this vow as well. Submit yourself to Christ, His word, and His church. Willing submission is an action, or maybe we would say it's a fruit of true love. Jumping back to the marriage, how many marriages, they say their vows, they get married, and then the rest of their lives is just happily ever after. It's a honeymoon for the next 60 years. None. Because we're all people. Some may face harder things than others as far as working through differences and difficulties. But you know, we're all cut from the same stuff. And in marriage and the church, there's offenses, there's misunderstandings, there's hurts that happen. And when an offense happens, what follows? What should follow is an apology and then action, change. And some questions to consider. What happens to the relationship if the apology never comes? What happens to the relationship when the apology comes but no change with it? What happens when a situation is just avoided and not allowed to be discussed? And as we think about some of these questions, how long can a close and intimate relationship last under these kind of circumstances? And I think we would all agree that if those kind of situations are taking place in a marriage, then it's not going very well. And if this can't work in the marriage, then it can't work in the church. A marriage can only have a truly beautiful relationship when the commitments made are mutually and willingly held to by both the husband and wife. And as soon as one starts to stray outside of what's agreed or expected because of their own desires or the selfishness, you know, their heart is losing the fight for the relationship. When one party is choosing to go against the expected or the agreed on, and the spouse can try to force the other one to comply. They can try to force that. But will forced compliance work if that heart is already moving away? If it doesn't want to work with the relationship? And so I question that again. Is it any different with our relationship with the church? And sometimes I hear the idea of it's what's enforced in our churches where the lines are. And I want to push back on that and say, if that's the kind of love we have for the church, then it's not true love. What are some reasons? And we talk about these starts, like a beautiful marriage, and when someone has baptismal vows, and it's a beautiful time and moment. Delbert talked about it in his devotions. He said life can become humdrum. You just kind of settle in. And I thought there was a term for that, and when I looked it up, it wasn't quite what I had pictured, but I don't know if you're familiar with this, and I'll try to say it right. Hedonic adaptation. And basically, it's a term that describes the psychological phenomenon of losing excitement for something once it is no longer new. Losing excitement for something once it is no longer new. And this can happen for several reasons. Most of us have experienced excitement of getting new things. Maybe it's a new phone. And promises so much and it's so exciting. And after a little bit, you know what? That new phone becomes normal. And what even happens to make it worse is you might see that the next model got released. And you might get an email, or the next model gets released, and you get tempted with being discontent, unhappy, dissatisfied. And the marketers even know how to drum it up. I got an email just the other day. Gregory, Pixel 10 Pro might be just what you're looking for. I kind of am, but not really. Not if they're playing on my discontentment. If I allow that discontentment to fester, I will see all the bad in what I have and all the good in what I don't have. And if you don't value what you have, then it's easy to take it for granted. And so we go back to the marriage illustration, look at how this affects marriage. And a couple continue, like, from that point they get married, they might continue to say, tell each other, I love you every single day. But is the attitude displayed from their heart? You know, how would it be if they told each other, I love you, but they were really grouchy when they said it? Or they were obviously not happy. And do the actions support the words? And what can happen, and happens so often in a marriage, after a little bit of time, the guys will start to do things in front of their now wife that they would have never done in front of their girlfriend, because they're starting to relax and take life for granted, or just settle back in. And some things like poor etiquette and manners might start to take place. And one day, the wife finally says to him, you know, I really wish you wouldn't belch at the kitchen table like that. And he says to her, is it really that big of a deal? We did it all the time at home, and all my friends do it at their houses. She says to him, well, I really hate it. It feels crude and disgusting. And they have a little conversation about it, and he says, okay, I'll stop if it bothers you. And so he stops for a few days or weeks, but eventually starts doing it again because she hasn't said anything recently. And Yeah, he'll continue to do that until she says something about it again. Why would he do that? Because he wants to, right? And so I question, is that true love? If he goes against what she made clear that how she feels about it. And Jesus said that true love will have the works to prove itself. So if the works are falling short, is there legitimate reason to question one's true love? How much can a husband do against his wife's wishes before she is forced to question if he still really loves her or if he loves himself more than her because he keeps doing what he wants to against her wishes? But he still says, I love you, right? Every day. So that makes up for his selfishness. I think we answered that already. No, that doesn't. When actions don't support the words become empty and meaningless. They actually kind of become mockery. And so as we get back looking at a relationship with the church and what we have as a body of believers have agreed to be, the question is how are we doing? That's why we have counsel. When we answer the questions tonight, is it more than just mere words? Have we had the actions that support our words, that show the true love and commitment? Because when we look at the three questions, they're entwined together. And the last question we have, the third question, do you support the church? Sometimes we say, do you appreciate the church or do you love the church? And I think those are all okay. But if that answer is at all questionable by our actions this past 6 months, then we must also question our answer to number two and to number one. Do you have peace with your fellow man if you haven't loved the church like you should have? Can you have peace with God if you haven't loved the church like you said you will? I heard a song. It was. I don't have the lyrics, but it was something about if Jesus was with you, and that thought, if Jesus went beside you through your daily life, the past 6 months, and he was standing in the room with us tonight, when you give your answer, could you say all is well? When you look back over your Christian life, has it been Christian? Or have you allowed carnality to corrupt it in your music, your screen time, your speech, your spending, your attitudes, you know, whatever it may be? Was it for him or was it for me? And these are some serious questions, because you know what? Jesus Christ was with you the past 6 months, and he is with us here tonight. A song by Keith Lancaster says, it's What Will He Say? And it starts off with what people say about your life, and it finishes with Christ. It says, after all has been done, after all has been said, what will they be saying after you're dead? When you come to the edge and your life has run out, what will they be saying your life was about? What will they say? And I'll just tuck this in as we think about what people are saying and as we consider how much Charlie Kirk's life was criticized. If we were put in that amount of criticism and interrogation how would my life hold up? Will they say Jesus was your holy example and that you followed him best that you could? Will they say that your life made a difference to the people who knew you best? After all that you've learned, after all that you know, tell me what you'd give in exchange for your soul. What would you give? When I stand at his throne and my name has been read, what will he be saying after I'm dead? What will he say? What will he say? And the thoughts of this song resonated with me because, you know, we'll be known to others by our actions. Our actions show where our heart truly is. And we all have a choice tonight whether we're going to be honest about where we are spiritually. But I remind you of two things. You know, there's a chance that our actions have already told some of our story to the church here. But most importantly, God knows. We're answering these questions before God. God knows and sees the heart. And he is the one that really matters, because he is the one we will all answer to at the end of life. What will he say? That's the question that really matters. And for those of you, you know, if you come tonight and by the grace of God, with an open heart, you've endeavored to live the way you should have, your Christian life for God these past 6 months, God bless you. And if there's some here who have knowingly chosen against loving God, loving their fellow man, and loving the church, will your words be honest, or will they be empty? And if that's where you find yourself, and you haven't been what you should have, you don't have to stay there. The reconciliation starts the same as it does in a marriage or any relationship. And that's with the words, "I'm sorry." Starts with the words, "I'm sorry." Openness and honesty are required to have and maintain a good relationship. And I encourage each one of us to do that. Not on a surface level. Like I said at the beginning, when we ask each other, "How are you doing?" No, these are serious questions. Our heart should desire the openness, the honesty that comes from, like in Psalm 139, 23, and 24, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." And I see in that psalm, none of us here is perfect, but I see the attitude that we need to have to live a victorious life, to live a life of love for the church and for our fellow man and for God. And it's a plea for God to clean the carnality out of our hearts, to choose to follow his way, to choose love for Christ, his people. Our ultimate goal is to be with Christ someday. So at the end of life, when we stand before him, what will we say? If we have loved him and followed his words, we will hear, "Well done, my good and faithful one. Well good and my good and faithful servant." So may God give each of us a love for the church that produces actions of humble obedience and the humility to serve and to sacrifice our attitudes, our opinions, for the greater good of the kingdom and his church family. God bless you.